behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott.
I'm Ben, and we've got our super producer, Noel, the plot twist Brown, with us as always. I'm interested to see how this one goes, man.
I was going to say you might be a little bit nervous today. Are you nervous?
Yeah, I'm nervous.
Are you nervous? Okay.
I'm empathizing with what you felt the last time we did this.
Yeah, this is only the second time we've attempted this, and this is, just so that you listeners know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
This is the second time we've done this. Last time was with, Barn Finds, right?
Right, that Barn Find in Austin. Just outside of Austin.
Yeah, yeah. This is a topic that I am coming in here with full knowledge of,
mm-hmm.
or at least some knowledge of. I don't want to over promote this or anything, but I got some knowledge of this one. And Ben, you don't even know what we're going to talk about today.
No idea.
No idea. I haven't told you the topic. I haven't shown you anything. I haven't shared anything with you.
Nope.
This is just a cold start for you. So let's see how you handle this.
I'm flying blind.
And I'm gonna ask you a question. And we'll see where this leads. We'll see how this all plays out here. It may or may not work. All right. So I was on vacation recently, and I was hanging out, just relaxing, soaking in some sun. And
yeah.
I thought, what am I going to talk with Ben about this upcoming episode? And it's killing me to think of, like, because we've got rules,
right?
We've got certain rules,
right,
that we can't apply to this podcast. Or we do apply the rules. We can't talk about certain things. And these
sure.
are rules that you right away set down when we first started talking about this, right?
Yes.
Yeah, you said no alternative fuels.
Uh-huh.
No
flying cars.
Yeah, flying cars. And the other one was autonomous vehicles. Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's just because – it's not because we hate those. It's just because those three things in particular seem to continually have little updates that – we have usually covered in some way before.
Oh, if you go back through our history, we have covered those three things, I think pretty extensively over the past 7 years, because we try to keep up to date with the latest of what's going on. So, that's the reason we don't talk about those three things. And of course, flying cars is just because those make me so angry.
Yeah, they're your Honda Odysseys.
Yes. That's a good point. All right. So here's the question for you, Ben. And this is the first time you're hearing this.
Yep.
All right. If you had the power to bring back one defunct American automaker brand or mark, which one would you choose and why? Now, this requires quite a bit of thought. It's more than you initially think, because you can make a snap decision about
it. Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
You can say, you could pick any brand you want and to say, like, oh, I really liked, the LaSalle. I would like it if LaSalle would come back right now and build cars, as they had back in the 1920s, whenever. I'll have to look up the stats on that. But the trick behind this, though, is that you got to kind of think about it this way. Let's say that the car company went out of business in the Great Depression, and a lot of them did. I mean, a lot of these makers that we'll talk about, and I don't have exact stats on this because there are, it looks like, thousands that are in front of me here.
Mm-hmm.
But many of them went out of business during, let's say, well, early 1900s.
Yeah.
There's a reason for that to happen. I mean, financial, fire at the factory, whatever it happened to be. It's easy to get nostalgic about that brand and think, I like the way the LaSalle looked back then, and I like what they were doing. How would that brand have evolved today?
Right.
What would they be building now? What type of vehicle would they be building now? And I know that's not exactly easy to pinpoint, but you can probably get close guess.
For sure.
Types of vehicles that they would be making. Would it be a sports car company? Would it be a luxury brand?
An economy car?
Yeah. Would it be more of like a city car vehicle?
Would they do service vehicles?
Yeah, exactly right. So, when you think about your answer, think about it that way. And I'll be honest, right now, I've got a few contenders. I don't even know if I have one answer for this myself.
Yeah.
So feel free to think about several of these. And you don't have to have an answer right away, because there's a few things I want to talk about first. We can discuss back and forth, but just kind of mull that over in your head for the end, that maybe, at the end come up with one that you would like to bring back, that you would like to resurrect.
Okay, but before we continue, let me just say, I'm all about snap decisions. I shoot from the hip.
Well,
I think I've got some contenders in mind right now, but that is just, again, I'm flying blind, so I'm not going to say what they are yet until we know all the things. You've already made a really good point about a ripple effect.
Uh-huh.
Wait, Guys, Scott's writing something down.
I am writing something down, and I am sealing it in front of me. I'm so that Ben can't see. This is like a magic trick that no one can see.
You're like a mentalist.
Yeah. I'm writing down a brand.
Do you know which one?
I'm guessing.
Okay.
And I'm keeping it off to the side. Ben can't see it.
Yep.
And we'll see if that matches up with what you say at the very end. But
yeah. What should we consider?
Well, consider all the okay. Let's think about all this.
All right.
There have been, and I don't even know if this number is right, but I would say 1,000 auto manufacturers from the United States that are defunct. If you look up the list of defunct automobile manufacturers from the United States, under just the letter A, because they're alphabetical,
right?
Just the letter A, there's something like 150 car companies that have gone under. Now, some of these have made one or two cars.
They were
early 1900 vehicles. They're the kind of one-off vehicles that that you don't often think of. I mean, you don't think of the Able Car Company. You don't think of
Alco something. Right?
Yeah, that's right. The Aero Car Company, the Athens Fox Company. You know, things like that. You don't think about those, but you do think about AMC. You know, you do think about the Eagle brand. You do think about Willys Overland. You think about you know, some of the bigger ones that were around for decades. And then suddenly went away, and a lot of good reasons for those. Again,
sure, yeah, we know, for instance, that even now in the modern day, countries around the world and companies in those countries are struggling to perfect the art of making cars and making a profit from selling them. There's a lot that goes into it, and while when you see this list of massive manufacturer casualties. I'm so glad you pointed it out, Scott, because we came across this list earlier in a previous episode.
We did.
And we both spent a lot of time digging through it, which is one of the only reasons why I can name, I was like, oh yeah, Alco, because I remember that one from that episode.
Oh, sure. The Detroit Electric Company cars, you know, all those strange ones like Checker, you know, cars that you may be familiar with even, you know, like Checker is one that I think a lot of people have seen. They've seen, what about DeSoto?
Yeah.
And then, what about, okay, here's a prime example of this. Now, you can find lists of these car companies all over the place. And Ben,
sure.
Just so that everybody knows, you're looking at some lists right now. Cause, I gave you the information. You're checking stuff out in front of you in the computer there and, hopefully getting some ideas of what.
Here's my promise. Okay. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but here's my promise. I am only looking at this list. I pulled up a list of defunct cars.
Yeah.
But. That I don't think that really affects our experiment here because we're gonna see if you've guessed correctly or if you're steering me toward this. I'm very into the idea of this as a magic trick.
Okay.
So I promise I'm not gonna look at anything else but this list.
Oh, that's okay because I hit you cold with this, so that, you know whatever you dig up now is fine. But I've had the luxury, I guess, of having the information ahead of time. So I have found several different lists of recent or dead, defunct and bankrupt car companies from the United States. And these, I'm kind of keeping this to the United States because, of course, we know that there are Australian companies that have gone under,
sure.
There are European companies that have gone under, Asian
amounts.
Companies.
Yeah.
That, you know, from all over the world, there are car companies that have gone under. But I'm keeping this relatively easy and hanging with the United States here. And I can give you a list of, and I'm not going to read all these by any means, but I'm just going to hold this up so you can see it, Ben, and I'll tell our listeners. This is a list of defunct car companies just since 1960 here in the United States.
Okay.
And the list is a full page long. I don't know how many are here. Maybe, if you had to guess, would you say 40, maybe 45, something like that?
I would say it's fair. A little less than 50.
Yeah, just ballpark. I mean, but some of the names on here. Now, of course, others that, you know, we've talked about in the past with vehicles that just failed, like the Dale is listed here from 1974.
Yeah.
Now, you know, they never really produced any cars, but they were a car company that is defunct. They were actually a car company for a short amount of time. Things like, Aptera Motors, you know, what's recently went under 2011. We were still early on our podcast. We were still hopeful that Aptera was going to come out with that crazy vehicle that they had. Super high mileage vehicle. It looked
right.
It looked crazy.
It looked a little too good to be true.
They were really building vehicles though at some point.
Yes, it is true.
And, let's see some of the others here that you don't think about. Edsel. Oh, we've talked about Edsel. Right?
Yeah.
And now that was a separate brand for the Ford Motor Company and, only around for about 2 years, 1958 to 1960, but they invested a pile of money into that vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, mostly into the, the advertising hype ahead of time.
Right.
Which failed to deliver, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately.
So there's a lot of these. What about the Gaslight Company? From, get this, 1960 to 1961, there was a Gaslight car company. I know. I'll have to look into that.
I've never heard of
them. Some of these you've never heard of. But what about, here's Hummer.
Oh, yeah.
Geo.
Mm-hmm.
There's also Plymouth. There's also Saturn.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the bigger ones. You know, there's Oldsmobile.
Oh, man, too soon.
These are big. These are big companies that are big brands, I guess, that went under. And, you know, a lot of times what happened was, and this is every case, but in this case in particular, let's take GM, for example, and Oldsmobile, I think maybe is Oldsmobile and Pontiac, really, if you want to think about it this way.
Mm-hmm.
At one time, those brands had their own engines, and that was critical because they weren't sharing across other platforms like they do so often now in General Motors and other car companies for obvious reasons. I mean, for profitability. But think about Oldsmobile. They had the 400, they had the 455 big block, and Pontiac had their own Strato Streak engine, which was a 287 cubic inch V8. But they weren't sharing that among other makes within General Motors' umbrella of car companies.
It was almost proprietary.
Exactly right. But that only lasted for so long because even in the mid-1960s, let's just take the Southgate, California plant, for example, in the 1960s. They were rebadging a lot of these different vehicles. And by rebadging, I mean a lot of the parts were interchangeable. I know they were slightly different, but they were running on the same line. Oftentimes, Buick, Olds, and Pontiac were all being built on the same assembly line. And later, from that same plant, from that, that Southgate plant, I believe they even added the Cadillac Sevilles onto that same line. So they're coming right off the same factory line. They've got interchangeable parts. Basically, it's badging and maybe a couple of extra, bells and whistles, some features for the Cadillac that didn't come on the Pontiac or the Olds or the Buick.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, among those three, there were some variation as well, but not a whole lot. Enough that you could run them down one assembly line, and at the end, you could have all three different brands or marks coming off of that line.
Yeah,
and eventually the fourth, the Cadillac.
That makes sense.
I know it's strange to think about that, but they said, you know, eventually, what's the point of running the Pontiac line? You know, if we're going to have the same product coming out, we can just concentrate. We can focus our attention onto other makes or other marks. And we don't need Oldsmobile as well because, you know, we've got, other brands, I guess, that cover that market or that.
Yeah, they don't want to overlap.
That demographic. Yeah, they're competing. They become, cannibalistic on themselves almost. They start competing with themselves for their own customer base and it becomes problematic.
Yeah. And it's strange because we have seen that happen, multiple times. In the car industry, right? In the auto industry.
Oh yeah, many, many times. Yeah. That they've decided that we're just going to simply shut down this arm of the company because, again, it's just cannibalizing itself. It just doesn't make sense. We can focus our attention on that and it will work. Hopefully we'll retain our customers. You know, there's some that are going to say that are brand loyal that are just going to say, hey, you're not making Pontiac anymore. I'm not buying General Motors products anymore. I'm going to shift completely over to, I'm going to be a Ford guy now.
No, stop me if I'm jumping ahead.
Oh, sure.
But there are a few other ways that a company could become defunct that are, and many of these ways, strangely enough, are more complex than just going broke.
Sure.
A company could be sold to another company or acquired, right?
Yeah.
And that happens, and sometimes when it happens, it's very good for the brand, but as is sadly, in my opinion, too often the case, when a larger company acquires a smaller auto manufacturer, it can be the death knell.
I can give you a prime example of this. American Motors Corporation. Now, they were active from about 1954 until about 1987.
Mm-hmm.
And here's basically what happened to the American Motors Corporation. They were purchased by Chrysler primarily because Lee Iacocca, when he was the CEO of Chrysler back in, when was it, the 1980s, I think.
Right.
He decided that he liked the Jeep division. And he wanted to purchase American Motors because Jeep was part of American Motors at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically did away with everything else except for the Jeep division. And that's something you just don't think about. It's like all that, you know, every other make, I guess, within American Motors was just done away with. And the Jeep was the only one that really hung in there.
Too cold.
Yeah, I mean, it is. But that happens. I mean, there are other examples out there as well. So I don't know. Where do you want to go with this, Ben? I've got other examples. Think about Tucker. There's a good example, right? Tucker was one that, I guess it was the lawsuit, really. That
Tucker was shut down by the big boys.
Yeah, the Securities and Exchange Commission that investigated him for stock fraud. Remember? Because
he was set up.
Yeah, he was selling dealerships, and he was selling what was it? He was selling stock in the cars when he wasn't really building the cars yet at that point, although he kind of was. He manufactured, what, 51 cars, I think?
I maintain that Preston Tucker was unjustly accused of crimes he did not commit, and that the big three conspired to bring him down.
Wow, Ben, that's strong. But I think that kind of mirrors what we said in the episode, didn't we?
It does.
Yeah, because we had a pretty good, you know what, I'm going to just promote this because I think our Preston Tucker episode was really good. The Tucker 48.
Oh, yeah.
I like that episode a lot. Now, I know it's three-parter. It's not for everybody. But I think we really hit on just about everything surrounding that case and that character and that time and that vehicle and just what made it unique.
Well, with three whole episodes, we darn well have better. And I'll tell you though that you can tell that I already am getting my dander up about that because I do believe strongly in that. Another way that a car company can be shut down will be due to entirely external factors, right? Beyond their control. That's what we're talking about. So like Tucker is a great, I think one of the most dramatic examples of that, but another example of that would be Hummer. Hummer's demographic, right? What they were buying was this thing that was power and it was status and it worked as long as gas was below a certain threshold. So when gas prices spiked, that really made things different for every thirsty vehicle. Yes. But Hummer, being one of the most thirsty, was by which I mean I'm only saying consumer vehicles, not large service vehicles, which of course have a entirely different relationship with fuel. But people who were happy having a Hummer at, what would you say, Scott? $2 gas, maybe?
Yeah, maybe even up to $2.50.
Maybe up to $2.50.
Yeah.
But $4, $3.50.
Then they begin to rethink about taking that vehicle up to the cabin in the woods.
Right.
It becomes a lot more difficult to fill a tank for $4 a gallon when it's, I don't know, I'm going to ballpark this, Ben. Is it like a 30-gallon tank?
It's got to be
a huge tank.
Yeah.
To fill a huge tank like that at $4 a gallon is a much bigger undertaking than filling the same size tank at $2.50. And a lot of people realize that late in the early, I don't know if I could say that, late in the 2000s, I guess, maybe,
toward
2007, 8, 9, 10, somewhere in there. But in the early 90s, it wasn't so much an issue. In fact, the vehicles were bigger in the early 90s. I mean, they progressively got smaller as they approached 2010 and their ultimate demise. I mean, we got to the H3, it was really like, it was enclosed, but it was like a big pickup truck.
Yeah, it was going that way, and the whole market was going that way. We saw a lot of the typically high-selling, very, very powerful pickup trucks, right, and SUVs. We saw a lot of them see a dip in sales. It might have even touched the F-150, which is like the king of pickup trucks,
sure,
right?
Yeah. I don't know. Do you think it would have hedged in on their numbers? I mean, you think it would have? Because it would take a lot to knock the F-150 out.
I don't think it was significant, but I think they probably felt a little bit of the heat from the kitchen.
You know, probably because it was an attractive package when it was when fuel was I guess affordable. When it was in the $2 range, or maybe even lower than $2, because I can remember in the early 90s, I want to say that it was probably in a dollar, and change.
Yeah.
Instead of being, again, $4, as it was 3 or 4 years ago, maybe 3 years ago.
So that's a good point. But, also, I'm not saying that Hummer's bad. It's just that they were not the right car for that time. Interesting little light at the end of the tunnel by way of a tangent. Scott, you know that once gas prices relaxed a little bit, deflated, and we'll see how long that lasts. But once that happened, the sales of those larger, more powerful vehicles started ticking right back up.
Ah, you know what? That's not surprising to me.
Surprising to me.
We're a fickle bunch, aren't we?
Wouldn't you Google something?
Yeah, you would think so. You would think that, you might realize that, yeah, the prices are going to go back up soon, and you're still going to be stuck with that giant truck or SUV or whatever. But you know what? Some people have to have a vehicle like that, and I'm sympathetic to that.
Yeah,
I know that if you're going to pull a trailer or you're going to pull a boat or you need it for farm work or you have a large family, you have to have a big vehicle. Or some people just do it simply for safety, and they're willing to pay that premium for that, and I don't blame them one bit. I mean, I think it's fantastic they're going to do that. Mm-hmm. But like for me, I guess I'd kind of look around and try to find something that's kind of a compromise, I suppose. You know, that's safe, it's efficient. You know, sure, I don't want to pay a ton of money. I don't want to buy something that gets very low fuel mileage or fuel has low fuel economy. But I think the fuel cost is maybe lower on the totem pole than some of the other stuff. I mean, I'm more concerned with safety.
Sure.
I'll be honest, appearance, performance, all that stuff really plays into it as well.
Right.
But you've also got to factor in your own personal needs. And if that includes pulling something huge, like a flatbed trailer with another vehicle on it, you're going to have a big truck.
Yeah, your Geo Metro is not going to cut it.
No, and that Hummer is a fantastic choice, really. I mean, but then again, do you want to pay that price for fuel for something that, you know, brand new from the factory gets 8 miles to the gallon?
Oh, man.
A lot of people don't, and a lot of people didn't, and that's what happened. So in 2010, they were gone.
So, these are several reasons. I think we're on the same page about this, that some of the more common reasons that a car company can fold. Now, in other cases, it can be due to criminal activity. It can be due to low quality of a car. There are a bunch of other things we haven't named.
And I can think of so many examples that we've talked about over the years that, that fit right into criminal activity,
right?
Other things, you know, like a fire in the here's one. I clicked on one earlier, and I can't find it because, I'll be honest, there's so many defunct car companies that I'm looking at right now on this list. I mean, if you haven't looked up the list already, I encourage you to do so. It will boggle your mind. It's huge. But I clicked on one in the A's, and I don't remember which one it was, but it said that, you know, it was a promising new car company that, you know, they had a factory fire early on.
Yeah.
The company had been around for about 2 years. They were just ready to produce cars, starting to produce cars.
Mm-hmm.
And a factory fire destroyed not only the building, but of course all of the office space and everything along with it, and the machinery that they used to build the cars. So, you know, again, where do you start over from there? You can't start over from there.
Yeah,
you've just invested your entire lifetime into this thing.
Yeah,
And we're talking like this was one from I think it was like 1902 or something.
And the overhead is so big, the margins can be so slim. It's very, very difficult to grow.
Oh, absolutely. Imagine the logistics of starting your own car company. Now, I know and a lot of them were pre-World War I.
Right.
It was a lot easier back then to start something like that, but it still required quite a bit of capital. You had to have quite a bit of money up front to buy the machinery, to buy the land, to have the people that were competent enough to do this with you. You had to be, you know, confident in their abilities. You had to be confident that they were good for, you know, their word was good, that they were going to actually produce.
Now, Henry Ford will roll over in his grave and probably shout at me from somewhere far off when he hears me say this, but there's a lot of luck involved too. And to say otherwise, it's true that luck by itself is never going to be enough.
No. You have to produce a quality product. And
right.
Just here's one example of that, Ben.
Yeah.
This does encompass other another continent. I mean, I know we said we were going to stick with U.S. cars or brands only, but just for this example, I want to tell you. By 1900, remember when I said that steam-powered vehicles were at one time more popular than the internal combustion-powered engines?
Yeah, it makes more sense. They were an understood technology.
Exactly right. So by 1900, there were more than 125 steam-powered car companies in the U.S. and Europe. Now, that's not cars.
Uh-huh.
That's steam-powered car companies. Creating steam-powered cars. At 125, now that's between the U.S. and Europe, so I understand we were talking about U.S. only, but Stanley was basically the lone survivor out of that whole mix.
Yeah, Stanley Steamer.
They were very popular, but they were also you know, very credible. They also had a good deal of street cred, I guess.
Right.
Because they were, for a steam-powered vehicle in the early 1900s, they were reliable.
Mm-hmm.
They did exactly what they promised. They were fast. They were efficient. They were everything that people wanted. Relatively easy to use if you consider a steam-powered vehicle easy to use, which they're definitely not.
Yeah.
But they were kind of like the lone survivor out of that. And I know there are other smaller ones along the way, but that was the big one. That was the one that remained. And they hung around basically until Internal combustion engines, gasoline powered, I guess. The gasoline powered option just became simply cheaper. It's more cost effective
right.
for a family to buy a gasoline powered vehicle than it was to run a steam powered vehicle.
Because the market scale.
Yeah, so that's the reason that they went under. That just gives you a glimpse of how many vehicles or how many car companies there were around and how many there have been in the past. And again, look at the list. I would be willing to wager that there's 1,500 car companies here.
Yeah, easily.
I would guess. I mean, it's just a ballpark, but I think that's about right.
I think it's more than 1,000. And I think if you're okay with it, Scott, first off, let me say this is a great question. Mm-hmm. I've still been thinking about it. Yeah. I think it's time for us to start giving our answers because I know you have a few contenders too. But before we do, it's time for a word from our sponsor. And we're back, Scott. Scott.
Yes.
Mi amigo, I've got to say, I'm interested. I am scooting to the edge of my seat
because
I got to know your picks. And I wonder if I can guess a few.
Okay. Is it disingenuous of me to say that I've got a few when I asked you to pick one?
No, not at all, because we both know that it's very difficult to pick one of anything, especially in this kind of question. So I have a couple.
So let's say three. If I could bring back three.
Okay.
All right, is that fair?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
You don't even have to go three, but if you want to go two or whatever, that's fine.
I'm going three. I'm taking every spot.
You could even take four, Ben. I'm that generous.
Wow, man. Yeah.
I know.
You're having a good day, huh?
So how about this? Let's say I'll say three.
Okay.
And my first one, this may be a surprise. I don't know.
All right.
Duesenberg. Yeah,
huh?
Duesenberg. Now, they were a high-end manufacturer. I mean, very high-end
custom coach builders, yeah.
Definitely. Let's see. Duesenberg was around from 1913 to about 1937. They were built in Auburn, Indiana. And they had a couple of different models. They had the Duesenberg Model A. They had the Duesenberg Model J. They had the Model SSJ. But they were an American luxury automobile from the very beginning. And the problem was, this is, a bad problem to have, or not a bad problem to have. They were too big, too fast, too hard to make. They were just too expensive overall. I mean, it was just a difficult vehicle to make because it really did have a lot of quality. It was a great big, beautiful, beautiful coachwork on this vehicle. Just an outstanding car. And I like them a lot. I've seen them at concourse types events.
Sure.
And I just love the looks of them. Now, what they would have evolved to, that's the question that I asked you. I think that, of course, they would have, I think they would have evolved along the lines of Rolls-Royce. I think that it would have stuck similar to that in that they probably would have gone with, even gone sportier, maybe.
Yeah.
So that, some of these Rolls-Royce cars have 700 horsepower. They have an incredible amount of torque. I know Bentley is like that as well.
Yeah.
Probably more so Bentley than Rolls-Royce, but... the luxury would be more like Rolls-Royce or, with a bespoke department.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they would have mirrored that in some way. So Duesenberg is probably my first choice as for one to bring back.
All right, Duesenberg. What surprises me about that is that most of our listeners would probably think I would be more likely to pick that one. This is a deep cut, Scott.
Yeah.
Well done.
Thank you.
Thank you. What's next?
Oh, next. Oh, you want me to go again?
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to go with... I'm going to say Pontiac.
Pontiac?
Yeah, Pontiac. And I'll tell you, first the general stats, I guess.
Okay.
Pontiac was founded in 1926. It went defunct in 2010. So while we were doing this podcast is when this one went away.
Yeah.
And I found that the cars that Pontiac was putting out towards the end, some of the last vehicles that they were developing or releasing, some of them were actually released already, like the G8. And, of course, there's the Solstice and all that, they're out there as well. But I found some of their final products to be some of the most exciting that they had come out with. And I think that if they had continued, if they would have been allowed to continue down that path, I think that it would have been a much more interesting brand in the next few years they had lost some steam, I guess, in the early 2000s and they just never quite recovered. But they were starting to. And that's when GM sacked the division.
See, that's okay. So, confession, Pontiac was also on my list for a little bit of a different reason and a nostalgic one. The Pontiac Bonneville, made from 1957, 2005. As a kid in my younger days, I I pushed not one, but two Pontiac Bonnevilles. And they were both around the same year, I want to say. But, man.
Wait, you pushed them?
Sorry, I'm using slang. I drove them.
Oh, I thought you meant you physically pushed them.
I did. I only did have to push one once off the road.
That's a big car.
Yeah, I hit some nails in the road.
And I should have known because you've talked about the Bonneville several times.
Oh, yeah.
And you're definitely a fan.
Oh, it was great. Yeah, it was. I wasn't the most popular guy in high school, I'll be honest with you. But that Bonneville, the first one, changed my life. And the interior is huge. It's a very smooth ride. Yeah. I got it from my grandfather. It's very much an old man's car. No offense to anybody, who disagrees, but that I believe it was an old man's car. It was comfortable. It was like I was in a Lazy Boy. I was in a little studio apartment made entirely out of Lazy Boy, and the engine itself, not a joke, you know, if you pushed it, it would respond with a surprising amount of power.
Oh, sure. Able to climb those Tennessee hills, right?
Right. Yeah.
You had to have something like that. You had to have a big V8 or something that was at least capable of getting up those steep inclines. So that's a great choice. That is not the one that I wrote down on the paper.
No.
I will see if I'm going to zero in on this one.
Okay, one last point, though. If we're still talking about ripple effects with Pontiac, I do agree that Pontiac overall would have – if they have more of a runway, they could have done some really exciting stuff. However, the Bonneville itself, with the fuel economy that it has, I think would have had to be radically redesigned or would have been cut anyway. Because they stopped, you know, in 2005, and Pontiac soldiered on without the Bonneville till, what, 2010, you said?
2010.
Yeah, so I think this is a car for another time. But man, this is one of my favorite times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Scott, one time, I it changed my dating life, you know?
Oh, I bet.
Cause people were like, oh, wow, nice car. And, you know, as long as they don't say, yeah, I got it from my grandfather.
You don't have to add that.
No. I was just learning how the dating game goes that time.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. You don't have to add that extra information. Just keep it simple. Right?
I mean, it wasn't a Trans Am, but I was trying. Okay.
I understand. I get it.
All right. What do you have next?
Oh, okay. And this will be my last one since I'm going to limit myself to three, I think.
Okay.
Maybe another surprise. The Stutz. And I'll tell you why.
Yeah, tell me why.
I know it's an obscure choice, yeah. But I'll tell you why. Because between a 1911 and 1935, that's when the Stutz Motor Company was active. Indianapolis, Indiana, that's where they were based.
Yeah.
They were America's first sports cars. So the Bearcat, of course, this was the one that raced in Indianapolis early on. They broke a lot of land speed records. A lot of them were converted into street cars. You could get a Stutz, you know, Bearcat for the street. They were really low slung. They were, they had something like 80 horsepower, I think. They had to close because of the Great Depression. I mean, the Depression is the deciding factor here. That's what shut them down.
Yeah.
And if they had continued to make cars, now imagine what Stutz could have become later on. Now, I know that there were cars that used the Stutz name later, I believe, some one-off vehicles that used that. But didn't Elvis have one? I think he may have. I think he did. And there was some weird story behind that one, too. Wasn't there? Like, it was offered to someone else. There's a story there with the Stutz, I know. That's like late in the 1960s, I believe. Mm-hmm. But anyways, there's an interesting thought, I guess, that, you know, or at least to me anyways, that if this, you know, that this producer of America's first sports cars were still around, what kind of cars could they be making by now? If they had honed their craft from 1911 all the way through, you know, 2015, what would Stutz look like right now? Because they would have kept with the time. So I wonder just what direction they would have taken. Would they have been exotic? Mm-hmm. Would they be more like, would they have developed into more of like a luxury sports car? I don't know. I can't picture where they would be right now, but I kind of tend to believe that they would be more on the pure sports car side.
Yeah, I think they would be more sports car than luxury.
And I want to say, like, And this would be interesting too. Like, imagine if they had decided to go like the pure sports car route, like Lotus has.
Right.
You know, where it's refine the weight, you know, keep that down, keep everything very simple. The engineering very clean, very, very crisp. Just keep it down to the bare minimum, and it's a driver's vehicle. I just wonder if Stutz could be something like that, or if they would have gone maybe the other side, where it's like, you know, an Aston Martin or something like that, where it's refined and it's luxury, but it's still a sports car.
Yeah.
Underneath all that, you know.
Yeah.
I wonder, but I thought that Stutz was an interesting choice, and that's why I picked it.
I am surprised that choice really did surprise me. All these choices are, I'm just glad I'm not the one trying to predict choices here, because I would have thought
so
a little bit differently.
Okay, well, good. So, is this your final pick?
I have two.
Okay,
so I do three because I did Pontiac specifically for nostalgia of the Bonneville.
Okay,
knowing full well that the Bonneville would not exist even if Pontiac did today.
All right. Well, I am out of picks. Those are my
all
three.
Right, here we go. The first one, which you already know what I'm going to say, Scott, and Noel, you probably do too, and listeners, I'm sure you know from my earlier soapbox stand I took in this episode. It is absolutely Tucker Auto.
Oh, Tucker.
Absolutely Tucker. That's one of my seconds. I feel like it's just so easy because I stand by it. But let's see if you get this one, and I think you probably did, and I think you might even know why. Packard. You wrote Packard. You got it.
I am revealing the card, and yes, I wrote Packard early in this episode, knowing that Ben has a love for Packard automobiles in particular. You have sort of a dream.
Yep.
That someday you're going to buy an old Packard and give it to your dad.
Yep.
That's a great thought. Now, I'm not going to, you can't hold you to something like that, because that's a very grand thing to do, a grand gesture.
It's
difficult.
It's tough.
It's getting tougher and tougher every year.
Yeah.
Because they're getting more and more expensive.
I know. I check.
Or, you know, they're becoming, I guess the ones that are run down that, you know, if you're going to restore it,
yeah,
the ones that you're thinking of are becoming more and more, I guess, derelict, you know.
Yeah.
They're becoming more and more rusted out and worn down.
To the point where you have to ask if you can save the chassis and the frame.
Ben, so now's the time. You got to jump right now because it's optimum, right? Right now would always be the optimum time, right? Because the longer the restoration projects go, the worse they get.
Yeah.
The longer the ones that are restored go, the more valuable they become.
Right, if you can still buy them.
So that makes any point in time when you're thinking about it, the time to jump, the time to do it.
You know, one thing is funny about this. First off, Scott, I have to say, I'm honestly impressed. I thought you would get it, but I thought maybe you would get it, but, you hit the nail on the head and you remembered the reason why.
I will be honest that a week or two ago, whenever I was thinking about this as a potential, I knew then what you were going to pick. If you only had to choose one, it probably would have been that one, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. Because it makes it easier for me to accomplish that life goal.
It's a company that was around for a long time, from 1899 to 1958. They were based in Detroit, Michigan.
Yep.
They were, again, American luxury car. It was just something that just couldn't hang on past the late 1950s.
Founded by a couple of brothers, just like so many other car companies.
Yeah, and the thing is that in 1954, it was purchased by Studebaker, so I know that, you know, that move happened. But what happened was it kind of alienated the luxury buyers that went along with, Packard, because this is now a Packard that's made by Studebaker.
Yeah, it's like, it's brand dilution.
Yeah, I guess it, in a way, I don't know if you can use the term suffer or not, but, maybe that's the way to say it. I mean, it harmed it. I guess it harmed its reputation. It tarnished the reputation of it. And, by 1958, they just couldn't hang on anymore. They weren't selling enough Packards to be able to make it.
If Packard was still around, then I think it would have been a slightly upmarket luxury brand. I think the buy from Studebaker, would still be a lot for them to try to walk past. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, like, if Kia for some reason bought, Bentley or something, and then someone else bought Bentley and tried to revive Bentley, right?
Yeah.
Then it would be tough for Bentley to walk back from that.
Okay, but that lends this question, Ben.
Ah, yes.
All right, so there is a company that owns some, I guess, exotic and some luxury brands that a lot of people wouldn't guess, and that's Volkswagen.
Right.
They have Audi, Bentley, Lamborghini.
Yeah, Bugatti.
Yeah, some of these really high-end vehicles. Now, does that tarnish their reputation in that Volkswagen owns them, or does that really not matter? I mean, it's just the parent company. They're kind of letting them operate on their own.
Yeah.
They're letting them do their own thing. But they do report back to Volkswagen AG, I guess, you know, or Volkswagen
Group. Yeah.
Group. Yeah. Volkswagen Group as like the parent company.
Yeah.
So what does that do for the reputation? Would that be the same thing as if Studebaker had held on to, Packard?
You know, what's interesting about that question, and I like that you phrase it, and you picked up where I was going with Bentley too. The question here is, does it matter as much now as it did then?
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of difficult for me at least to extrapolate where Packard would be now if it continued, you know,
mm-hmm.
or even who would own it. What if Packard and Studebaker were bought?
Well, okay, think about this. Studebaker was the largest wagon manufacturer in the world. This is before the horseless carriage business. So, you know, around 1902, I think, is when they started actually building battery powered cars and, you know, things like that. So they've been in the game a long, long time. They've got an established reputation. It's a good company. But what was it about, you know, Studebaker buying Packard that led people to think, like, that's not really the quality that I'm looking for here? Was it because they were a luxury mark and Studebaker wasn't considered a luxury mark at that time, maybe?
Yeah, maybe it was because it was the opposite of Packard was sort of a quality, known for its quality, whereas Studebaker was more so known for its quantity.
Yeah, that could be it. I can see your point there. All right, so... just something to ponder, I guess, you know, mm-hmm. that, does that parent company really tarnish the reputation of the brands that are under that umbrella?
I can't believe you, I am impressed that you at the beginning of the episode said, hang on, and wrote down Packard.
Oh, you know, I'm like a Las Vegas show.
Yeah. Yeah.
I should have suspended it above the studio in a box where everybody could see it, or at least you and Noel could see it.
Right. Yeah.
And then, made the box, made the paper around the box flame up or something.
Yeah, like
something
a
dramatic.
Fog machine.
Yeah, yeah. I really need to up my stage presence.
Well, this is a starting point.
I guess it is. But, done. I mean, that was,
done.
I had actually picked that, like I said, a couple weeks ago, and I was pretty sure, based on the whole nostalgia thing. And
right.
All that.
But
I'll tell you, the Pontiac Bonneville, that was a bit of a surprise, but I should have thought of that one as well. I don't know why Pontiac didn't come up in my thought process.
Oh, you got Pontiac, though.
I picked that on my own, though.
Right, right.
But not for the same reasons.
Well, listeners, now we are going to throw it to you. What defunct car company would you like to see brought back? And you know what? Let's be fair. Pick up to three.
Yeah, and I'm making an American car company because that's the game we were playing today. And maybe, who knows, maybe we'll play this in the future with other continents, I guess.
Sure, yeah.
That'd be kind of fun. This is a fun game to play.
Which cars from behind the Iron Curtain would you bring back?
Oh, boy. Yeah, yeah.
So let us know on Facebook and Twitter. Check out our website, carstuffshow.com, if you want to hear some of the older episodes we inevitably refer to at times. And if you want to write in with your picks, suggestion for a future topic, or hey, just to say hello, look at this car I saw. We love that when people send pictures of the weird and notable vehicles they see. Well, the good news is you can do that right now. I mean, unless you're driving or something, you can do that today. Our email address is
carstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.